Hi, good afternoon, everybody. I'm happy to be here this time to actually discuss the interesting part of this project. So last year you got to hear about how I developed the SNP chip. Today we're actually going to look at the interesting stuff and look at some results. So you'll notice here actually kind of a slight change in the name here. And this is hopefully what the chip will remain called as, and I'll kind of discuss how we got to this point. So just for a quick background, most of us know that SNPs are single nucleotide polymorphisms, which is a change in one nucleotide of DNA. And the good thing about that is that this is the highest number of possible markers that can exist in a genome. So the cotton genome includes approximately 2.6 billion nucleotides, the tetraploid genome that is, based on 26 chromosomes that average about 100 million nucleotides average per chromosome. So here's kind of a depiction. So we can see that there's two SNPs that we're able to locate on a chromosome. And what our goal is actually to associate those SNPs with some trait of interest, here shown fiber length. So just as a quick background, Amani this morning actually gave us kind of a background for this. But just to reiterate, so the cotton SNP chip is an aluminum-infinium assay. You can see the chip here. And it actually contains 63,000 or slightly over 63,000 SNPs in the public content. So that's divided into intraspecific, which is useful for hirsutum breeding. So hirsutum by hirsutum, 45,000 markers, and then just about 18,000 are actually interspecific markers. So those will be useful for our intergression breeding. So breeding another species into hirsutum background. And then because of the format of the chip, there's actually 20,000 SNP, or 20,000 assays really, depending on which type of SNP you want to put on there, as private content. So if I purchase the chip, I can actually add my own SNPs onto it if desired, if I find something that is linked as a QTL, for instance. And we can process 24 samples at a time very quickly. And this SNP chip was built on both published and donated SNP sets. I think actually at this time around, most of the SNP sets have been published. So now that I have developed the genotyping tool, what are our goals with looking at that? And this is what I'm going to discuss today. So we want to develop a cluster file. As Amani talked about, she's working with one for diploids. My project actually is developing one for tetraploids. And then evaluating the performance of the array itself in those tetraploids and the reproducibility of the array. And then also looking at starting high density linkage mapping with the array. So just to kind of discuss the cluster file, as Amani mentioned earlier, we want to be able to take our sample data and use that for automated genotyping. So you can see kind of a picture here. If you run the array, it's a two floor four system, so you either get a red or a green in order to get your genotype. And in order to make this cluster file, we actually need representatives for each of our different genotype clusters for every marker. And this kind of depicts the samples that were actually used to make this cluster file. So you can see that there's almost 1,200 samples of these different types here that were utilized in order to make the cluster file that we're going to make available to the public. But the problem with cotton is that it's still problematic, even though we have this large number of samples, that we're not covering all of our different genotype positions, which can cause some problems, but it's very difficult to deal with. So basically, once we have our cluster file, we're actually going to take our markers that are synthesized on the chip. So it's the 63,000, which is in the new name, of markers that are actually on the chip. And we can classify those into two categories. So there's successful functional markers. So those are things that are working on the array, and I can get a genotype possibly for. And then there's also things that are failed, such as this, that looks really nasty, and you can't define anything from that. So this is a failed array or failed assay. So the functional markers are then split into different categories. We can get intergenomic markers, which are identified as homeosnp. And here is an example of that. So homeosnp being that we're amplifying homozygous loci in the two different subgenomes, which gives us a heterozygous genotype for everything on the 1,200 samples. The next category is you can actually get monomorphic markers, which look like this. So almost all of our samples are going to be in a single genotype, but this genotype is a homozygous genotype. So it's assaying a position successfully, but we don't see any polymorphism in the samples that we're assaying here as a part of the cluster file effort. And then the other choice is we can get polymorphic markers, which look nice like this, so we can actually get genotypes for our samples here. So it'd be like AA, AG, and GG over here. So the polymorphic markers are the ones that are currently listed as successful markers, but I do have this star up here by our monomorphic markers, because as the assay is working, it is possible that we just didn't have the samples that represented the alternate genotype on the cluster file. So in the future, when we scan a large number of samples, we might actually be able to use some of these markers. So when we look at the breakout of these different types of markers, I'm able to find, so of our total 63,000 markers, I'm able to identify 55,000, 201 that are that functional type, which is 87.5%, and then just under 8,000 are failed markers. So for the most part, we're going to ignore these failed markers here. And then these are three different amounts of functional markers. So the ones that we're primarily interested in and that I'm going to report data on is this 38,822, which is 62% of the markers that are on the chip as success rate of the chip, which may increase with these monomorphic markers if we're able to find samples that represent the alternate genotype. So comparatively to other species chips, this is actually a pretty good rate. This is what is expected with polyploids, so we're pretty happy with that. But the question is then, how can we use those markers? Is the chip going to be useful to me? So in order to look at that, you're actually looking at the transferability of markers. And the good thing for us is that 77.3% of our markers actually have a minor allele frequency in that 1,200 samples that we used to make the cluster file, greater than 0.05. And the average, actually, of the polymorphic markers is 0.19. So that's very good for me that I can use that in different samples. So the next thing I wanted to look at is actually the performance and reproducibility of the array. So this technical replicate value here at 99.93% represents technical replicates of the same DNA sample run on different chips. So the good thing for us is that this is almost 100%, so we don't see any difference really between the same DNA run at different times. So that gives us kind of a standard that we can use the array and be able to reproduce that accurately. So in general then, I wanted to look at other types of sample replicates. So we're looking at percent similarity here. And individual plants, as you would expect from the same seed source, are highly reproducible. However, when we go to individual plants from different seed sources, so if I got something from the GenBank compared to something that's been in my lab for 30 years, we see a lower percent similarity. And when we go over to actually line pools, then we're actually seeing even lower reproducibility or similarity, sorry. So the percent similarity is actually quite variable between lines, and it depends on the lines that you're looking at, how variable that is. So that's actually something we want to look at. So it's important, this information is important for us to know that if I want to be able to compare to your sample, if you're publishing something with, say, TM1, how does your TM1 compare to my TM1? So this is important, particularly for check lines and things of that nature. So in the ability to reproduce previous study findings is highly dependent on that. And then also being able to assay the same loci throughout different generations for multiple or for marker-assisted selection is very useful. So then moving on to my third objective, I'm performing high-density linkage mapping, and I actually have two populations for that. I have both an intraspecific and an interspecific population. So as you can see depicted here is actually the linkage groups for the intraspecific markers. In both populations, I'm able to get 26 linkage groups, which is good. We expect that since there's 26 chromosomes. And this intraspecific population is actually a cross between phytogen 72 and Stoneville 474, utilizing 93 F2s of that cross. And I'm able to map almost 7,200 SNPs from the array in that population, which is also a good result. Most of those are actually coming from the hirsutum set, as expected, and then a few coming from the other species set. Developing a map of almost 3,500 centimorgans. But then when we move on to the high-density linkage mapping of the interspecific, so this is a cross between TM1 and 379, we're having problems with our linkage mapping here. So this is what happens when we de novo map this linkage group. As an example, this is actually LD plot here. So anything that's red should be highly linked to the thing that is next to it. So when we see red out here in the corner like this, and no red here in the middle, then we know that our linkage group has a problem. So what I did was I went through all of the linkage groups of the de novo group and looked at what is going on here. So when we see these problems, it's actually correlating with where we see a big gap between two sections on the interspecific map. And we can also see, compared to the intraspecific map here, that it looks to be inverted on both sections. And you can see on the recombination plot here that there's a definite line there, and we shouldn't see that like that. So in order to fix that, I'm actually using a framework map from the intraspecific map to correctly orient these contigs. And then this is what it looks like once we fix it. So as expected, the red goes diagonal to diagonal on the LD plot. We don't see any lines in our recombination plot, and everything looks pretty syntonic compared to the intraspecific map here. So the results of the interspecific map, once it was corrected, for hirsutum TM1 and barbadensi 379, is that I am able to map 19,000 SNP. A good proportion of those are actually coming from the hirsutum set, and then a large number are coming from the other species set, which were developed for barbadensi, so that also is expected. And this actually has a slightly larger map than the intraspecific at 3955 centimorgans. So then kind of that's what I have now, and then what do we want to do in the future? So I think it's very important for us to assess the levels of heterozygosity remaining in the GenBank lines. And that's particularly important knowing that there are differences between different lines, and in the line pools you can see how much heterozygosity is remaining. So that's important for us to take a look at. And it will also allow us to map additional SNPs in different populations. So certain populations are only segregating for a certain number of markers, as we saw with my intraspecific cross here. So if we're able to map multiple populations, we'll actually be able to localize all the polymorphic markers using different populations. And then additionally, we'll be able to do some genome-wide association analysis, hopefully of a large number of lines. We have a pretty good start with the samples that we were able to run as a part of this project. But running additional lines will definitely be of benefit to the community. So, as well as quantitative trait localization studies, as well as marker-assisted selection introgression, for wild species lines, particularly our lab is interested in that, as you've heard today. And then this will also assist in refinement of the tetraploid genome sequencing once that is available. So I'd like to thank these different people, particularly NSF and Cotton Incorporated for funding, Illumina for providing some of the chips for this project, as well as the many collaborators here, and particularly Trait Genetics for helping with the cluster file. So thank you, and if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
We've got time for questions for Amanda.
No question.
Amanda, the TM1x379, so you showed that you had to make some corrections with that. Yeah. Do you think that was just specific to that, or do you anticipate you may have that problem with other barbadensi hirsutum?
So the question is, why in the interspecific map did we have these problems with the linkage groups? And I'm not particularly certain of the answer. I think we need to study it further to know that answer. We're actually looking at adding samples to that population to see whether that will increase our ability to possibly find better recombination in those areas. I think they're low recombination areas, but I'm not sure if it's physical rearrangements between hirsutum and barbadensi. Hopefully we'll be able to see that. Nobody?
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.